Emerald Health Bioceuticals has developed the world's first non-cannabis line of herbs and botanicals that go beyond CBD. Each product is expertly formulated with their science-backed proprietary PhytoCann complex, a powerful blend of non-cannabis phytocannabinoids, along with other proven ingredients that support the vitality of your endocannabinoid system. Visit them at www.emeraldhealthbio.com to learn more.
New to the living healthy lifestyle or a healthy living veteran, this is your place for honest answers.
Naturally Savvy.
With registered holistic nutritionist Andrea Donsky.
And health journalist Lisa Davis.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Andrea is away today. I love when I get a book that actually gives me things to do that are going to not only better my life, but better the world. This is a great book. It's called Give a SH asterisk T. Do Good, Live Better, Save the Planet, a Practical Handbook by Ashley Piper. Ashley, so excited to have you on.
Oh, I'm so excited too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the book is fantastic. You know, I have to say, I think what you've done is so good because you write a book that's really funny and enjoyable and clever and gives us those hands-on tips that we all need. I also love that you talked about making the natural lip gloss when you were 11 and how even the mean girls, you know, were nice to you. So that must have been some lip gloss.
Thank you. Yeah, it was magic. So I grew up pretty similarly to a lot of people, a lot of Americans, I would say. I was eating meat for every meal pretty much. I was attuned to a few different like environmental/animal rights issues. Like I learned about animal testing on cosmetics at a very young age, because as I described in the book, I found a pamphlet at my local grocery store that kind of detailed the gory reality of animals used in vivisection for testing the efficacy of products. So those kinds of things I was decently attuned to. But I kind of just went on a personal journey around sustainable living when I maybe was in my 20s, and I'm 37 now, and just was honing kind of personal habits and tips that I would pick up or develop just for myself, just for my own personal rubric of living. And I was also a political strategist at the time, and I kind of had this like quarter life crisis where I really enjoyed my career, but I also thought, oh gosh, you know, the planet is really in peril. I wish I could parlay the skill set that I have that I'm doing for politicians and bring that into messaging in a more kind of warm and approachable way, how easy living sustainably can be. And so I did kind of transition my career into doing some of this sustainable living stuff on the side. And at first I was, you know, blogging about it, and that just felt like I was preaching to the choir a little bit. And then I started writing for more mainstream outlets like Refinery29 and Glamour, really bringing the conversation to the fore around sustainability, and then doing television as well. And so through those, I think the book was kind of a natural extension of all of those enterprises, because I would have people say, you know, I really do care. I really do want to do things that are better for the environment. And I really do believe that everybody is quite well-intentioned. But I just don't know where to start, you know, or it just feels like such a big problem that I don't even know where to begin, or I don't even believe that what I do, even if it is something that's a big step for me, is going to make a difference. So I really wanted to write a book that would, one, debunk the myths or the stereotypes that living sustainably is crunchy, it's fringy, it's expensive, it's going to make you weird, you're going to be wearing all crazy hemp clothing and fanny packs and stuff. I didn't want it to feel like that.
Sure.
And I also wanted people to kind of be reminded again, especially in this political climate, that it does matter, obviously, what our politicians do, but we can still make positive impacts by making small shifts in our personal habits. Because it is really our personal habits and our consumption levels that have gotten us into this place, or into this mess in the first place. So just reminding folks, like, I hate to overuse the term empower, but I hope that people find this book empowering because they remember the impacts that they actually have.
Oh, definitely. And I love how you have these different sections. Give us in your home, in the kitchen, in your closet, in the mirror, in the wild. Let's talk about in your home. You know, I grew up, I was a kid in the 70s, and my dad was super into recycling, like even before it was big. Yeah. So I was always into that. And we eat mostly whole foods, but if there's a box from something or envelopes, junk mail, I don't think most people recycle that. We even have recycling where you put everything in one place. You don't have to sort anything.
Yeah. It's really easy.
It's so easy. Like, what the hell?
Right. You're absolutely correct. It's gotten way easier than when your dad was probably doing God's work over there, recycling all sorts of things for you guys. I live in a city where it varies by municipality. So I live in a city where we also have combined recycling, so I don't have to sort as well. Some cities don't. Some cities you still have to separate out the paper, the plastic.
And trust me, I did that for years, by the way. I think people should still do that. We used to have so many different bags of all the different things. It's definitely worth it.
No, I mean, same. There are certain areas that basically may have to do a little bit more work, but I think it's estimated by the EPA that almost like 92% of municipalities have curbside recycling or very easy recycling, as in you don't have to drive to a designated facility to drop it off. So some of the exceptions there might be folks who live in pretty rural areas, folks in underserved areas, but by and large, most of us, yes, are very, very lucky in that we have municipally supported curbside recycling, which is pretty awesome compared to how it used to be. That's why it is mind-boggling that people aren't necessarily doing it. But I do talk in the book a little bit about how while recycling is wonderful, and I'm sure you learned from your dad, and I learned growing up that like the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, it always felt to me like recycling was kind of the end game. It was where trash went to become regenerated into something else. It was like the great savior of the environment. And really, we are kind of finding out that it's not as effective as we thought, or rather, it's not as effective when we use it as the only thing that we're doing. So I think the EPA says that it's about 75% of our waste is recyclable, but only about 30% of that makes its way to the proper recycling outlet. And we know that recycling requires a significant amount of energy and resources and manpower to a certain extent. And we also know that a lot of that kind of margin of error there is because of human error. We know that you can go to a Starbucks, for instance, and I'm not villainizing Starbucks. They have recycling receptacles right there, which is great. But you can go there and you can look in the recycling kind of bin, and then you can look at the trash can, and the contents of both are virtually identical. That's not Starbucks' fault. That's our fault.
Exactly.
Even though we are well educated around like what's not recyclable at that particular retailer. So we're not super great at recycling, and it's simply not the only solution for the planet. It's a nice complement to an overall waste reduction strategy.
Yes. But
really, I'm like hoping to encourage folks in this book too to just look at how much waste are they creating or how much packaging are they purchasing generally, and whether or not it's recyclable to reduce that.
You also have minimalism pared down to live it up, because I only shop secondhand. Oh. Well, okay, underwears and bras I buy new, but everything else is secondhand.
You are awesome, girl. You are doing it.
Well, let me tell you, right now I'm wearing a dress from Prana. I got it on eBay for $20 because it's used. It looks brand new, and it's normally $80. I'm not going to go. I mean, I love Prana's clothes, but I'm not going to buy them new. And then I feel better because talk to us about that, about the importance of secondhand and how that really helps. Because think about all the water it takes to, like, have a freaking pair of jeans, right? It's outrageous.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm a big advocate for what we call secondhand first. So whether you're buying clothes, you're buying a car, you're buying electronics, furniture for your home, as much as possible, utilizing what's already here is 100% the most environmentally friendly thing that we can do. If you must buy new, then I give a lot of guidelines in the book for how to find ethical manufacturers or more just high quality product that's going to withstand the test of time, whether we're talking about your home or your beauty and personal care routine or your kitchen or your wardrobe. But yeah, secondhand first, and what I was hoping to also, just as an aside, to accomplish with this book, because I think you touched on it, and it brings me a lot of joy, is that I was really hoping to show people that not only are these little tidbits, you know, completely customizable to your life. I don't want somebody to pick up this book and go, oh God, it's all or nothing. I can't be perfect, so I may as well not try at all.
Exactly.
That ain't the point of this.
No,
the point
not
is that
at all.
Anybody who's busy can kind of pick it up and say, ooh, one or two things I can do. You know, okay, if you are not feeling like you can eat more plant-based, oh, there's a lot of other things that you can do that still pack a nice wallop in a positive way for the environment. But I also wanted to provide all of the other benefits to living in this way. So you touched on a great one, which is high saving money, and everybody likes that. Secondhand shopping is not only better for the environment because all of those items are already here, but it's fantastic for your wallet, and it's great for style. I know famous magazine editors at fashion magazines who almost exclusively shop vintage because they're tired of looking like everybody else when they go to these big events and stuff. They want something that feels unique. So there are quite a few benefits there. And we are hearing a lot more about how clothing recycling, for instance, isn't really that effective. We're going and bringing tons and tons of clothing over to Africa. Nobody wants our used clothing, basically. So we need to find other ways to utilize it effectively so that we're not making it someone else's problem.
Let's talk about in the kitchen. Yeah, because I know you talk about going vegan, which is big. And like you said, if somebody looks at that and says, oh, I can't do that, you can still eat more vegetables and you can make little changes, right?
Right. Yeah, so I'm personally vegan and I have been for a while, but the book wasn't written necessarily from my personal convictions around it, but rather leverages a lot of data that we're especially seeing. You know, there was a pretty longitudinal, well-researched study that came out of the University of Oxford early last month that said that transitioning to a more plant-based diet is the single most powerful thing you can do to positively impact the planet. The single most.
So they
had all these other metrics of, you know, ooh, I'm driving a hybrid car or electric car, all this, more powerful than any of those other swaps. So we've seen and we know based upon a variety of sources, and these are sources that have different political leanings. Some have skin in the game, some don't. Over the past pretty much decade, we know that animal agriculture contributes to climate change pretty significantly. So anywhere from 14.5% to around 51% of harmful global emissions can be attributed to climate change. So that's pretty staggering, or can be attributed to animal agriculture. So that is pretty staggering. We can pretty safely make the correlation that what we're eating and what we're choosing to put on our plate can either help the planet or harm the planet. So we also know that animal products require significantly more resources than, say, a lentil. or like soy milk. So because there's been studies that are related to that, how much water, how much land, how much transportation, fuel, all that is required to bring certain items to market. And animal products are just notoriously high because if we look at it, animals are kind of the middleman between grain and other things and the meat that we eat. They're sort of like fed the grain and then we've got the meat. So I certainly don't, I'm not going to discourage anybody if they read the book and they go, oh my gosh, I would love to be vegan or vegetarian tomorrow. I have already gotten some of like those letters or, you know, messages from people,
great.
Which is exciting.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to just encourage people and also celebrate people for, hey, I had a meatless lunch today. I'm probably going to eat meat for dinner, but I still had an intentionally meatless lunch. That kind of stuff, I really believe that those changes make a big difference too. So I don't want anybody to pick up this book and feel like, ooh, I'm judging them, or ooh, they're not good enough or anything. I really feel like even a shift in a meal, having a meatless day, having a meatless week, those things all make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And also just curbing meat consumption, you know, lessening it generally is shown to have a pretty positive impact on the planet.
Oh, that's great. You know, speaking of animals, let's get into In the Mirror chapter. You have animal testing and underneath in parentheses, you write is bullshit. Talk to us about this.
yeah, this is kind of a banner issue for me because it was the thing that was like my gateway drug into animal and environmental stewardship when I was 11 and I found that pamphlet.
Yeah.
So animal testing in the United States, at least, is a really kind of disappointing topic because there are so many other countries that have already outrightly banned it for beauty and personal care products. So pharmaceuticals is a whole other bag of worms, bag of marbles, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of animal testing that goes on in pharmaceuticals to determine whether or not something is quote unquote safe. So I won't even get into that. But for beauty and personal care products, it's really not necessary. It's not actually very effective. A lot of the animals that are used for testing, they're not bioidentical to people, shocker. So, you know, we don't have the same responses as a rat does, for instance, to a shimpanzee, or as a rabbit might. And the tests are really barbaric. You know, they can range from more topical skin irritation tests, which can still cause significant damage to these animals, all the way to what they call kind of maximum lethal dose tests, which are forcing animals who are restrained, no painkillers, to ingest certain ingredients and certain quantities to determine at what point those ingredients can actually be fatal. So that is, you know, that's crazy, right? That's still going on for home cleaners, laundry detergent, shampoo, lipsticks, like just crazy, especially since there aren't that many new ingredients that haven't already been tested being introduced in the marketplace.
Yes.
And we're not required by law in the United States to have any kind of animal test done on those products. There's no governing body that says, hey, you know, it'd be great if you tested on animals. If anything, any of the governing bodies that do have any stake in products coming to market are really encouraging folks and companies to find non-animal methods of determining efficacy and effectiveness of the product. So it's a very, like, weird legacy issue, because there are companies that have been testing forever, and there are companies that breed the animals that are tested on, and there's kind of a symbiotic relationship there that really involves money. And so it's something that, you know, we've seen the EU, we've seen Israel, India, there are a lot of countries that just say, we're not going to do animal testing at all. And we're just pretty far behind on that. So I show readers how to find things that are quote unquote cruelty free, that don't involve any animal testing, to come to market. Because I think it's important, and I think it's something that a lot of people might know about, but they certainly wouldn't think it's still going on today. It's way too Game of Thrones sounding to be going on today.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah, it's true. Well, that's what's so good in the book, is because people want to know, well, then what do I buy, and what label do I look for? What ingredients do I look for? So I actually have a podcast now, which you should come on, called Just Ask David, which is with David Pollack. He creates natural beauty products, and he has great stuff. If you look up Pure Attitude, they have really wonderful things. All right. I want to talk a little bit about Pet Pals, because if you go on my any social media, you will see my pit bull Blue. I call him Mr. Ooh. Baby. He is the sweetest boy in the world. I'm always like, ignore the bull, get a pit. In the book, I love how you have this Pet Pals, adopt, don't shop. And then you even have stuff on sustainable supplies, which are really cool, because I think when you get a dog, you automatically just run to the big dog or, you know, cat pet store place, you know, and you just buy all the stuff. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, one, Blue sounds like a doll.
So sweet.
Two, I'm like you. I have rescue and adopted animals who are like my children.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is just from the same way that I look at actually like buying clothing or buying furniture for your home. Getting anything secondhand that's already here on the planet existing is far more environmentally friendly. But then I do feel like there's an ethical component, and people do tiptoe around it, because there are still folks who go to breeders to get pets, or pet shops, God forbid, and they think, oh, well, it's not a puppy mill, so it's fine. Well, no, but it's not the best choice you can be making. And I'm sure I'm going to have pitchforks at my house over that one, but it's simply not. We know for a fact that in the United States, we euthanize millions of animals every year, and it's not because all of those animals are too aggressive to properly be rehomed. It's because there aren't enough families, there's not enough space in shelters who are interested in adopting. So we're taking great dogs and cats and other companion animals, and we're putting them to death, essentially, because we're not making space for them, or because we are obsessed with going to breeders and getting a certain breed of dog, because we are been brainwashed into thinking a kind of dog is hypoallergenic, or whatever the crap du jour is that people are choosing to believe. So I really am a big proponent, like you are, of animal adoption.
Yeah.
From a sustainability perspective, but also because I do believe it's like a moral imperative, right? Like,
oh,
if we
yes.
know that millions of, you know, animals are being put to death every year needlessly, like, and yet we don't help that problem, that's on us. So, big time into that, obviously. But yeah, sustainable supplies, I kind of liken animals to kids. We think that, oh my gosh, we got to get the fanciest stuff, you know, for them, the best new toys, all this kind of stuff. We know that most pet food and also pet toys are made in China. So that in and of itself has kind of resource burden and environmental impact. And then they have to be trucked over here. I have actually found that all my dogs really enjoy cut up old t-shirts tied into, like, you know, ropes and stuff that they can tug on. And it's a great way actually to get rid of, like, used underwear in a way that isn't throwing it in the landfill. It sounds kind of gross. You clean it, of course, beforehand. But I wanted people to know you don't have to go out and buy expensive stuff.
No, you don't.
It's kind of that old adage, like, you know, you get the kids, like, a gift for Christmas and it comes in the box and they're more excited about the box.
Exactly.
I feel like that's kind of how animals are. So, yeah, I wanted to give folks a little bit of guidance around if you do adopt a companion animal, you don't have to go and spend thousands of dollars on supplies for them. One, they're going to be grateful as heck for to be part of your family. But two, there's a lot of very simple things that you can do to bring them joy and keep them occupied.
Yeah, it's true. When it comes to, you know, babies, I mean, people just go way overboard with all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm again, I did a lot of secondhand shopping for when my daughter was born. You know, there's so much. I love eBay because you can type in lot of clothes for newborn and you'll get like so many things. And so
just
what
so
if someone's
stuff.
Worn them before? I don't know. To me, that's just the way to go. All right.
And I love it.
Yeah,
you're
it's really good.
You are the physical embodiment of this book, girl. You are like the OG of giving a shit.
Woo-woo. I do. All right, let's talk about food shopping. I love this. BYOB, know before you go, shop with the list, buy only what you need, grab organic when you can, support fair trade. I like this. Eat ugly food.
So we throw out a significant portion of our food, even after we've gotten it. But before it even gets to market, a lot of produce is just tossed because it's deemed not cosmetically appealing enough to be brought to the stores. So that's crazy. In a country where there are people who are starving, in a world where, you know, where there are millions of people who don't know where their next meal is coming from, where there's famine in other countries, it is criminal that we're throwing out properly good food just because we don't think it looks as good. So there are actually some cool companies like Imperfect Produce that will send you boxes of less cosmetically appealing fruits and vegetables that they have rescued from the pre-market cycle and bringing it to people because it all tastes the same. And in some cases, it tastes even better because we know that those heirloom varieties can look kind of funky sometimes, but they're, you know, the nutritional profile's all there, the flavor's all there. So I do encourage folks to, when they go to the grocery store, you know, to buy things that might look a little wackier because those are going to go to waste.
Oh, completely.
And the other tips in there, you know, the one woman called me, she messaged me on Instagram and she said, oh my God. And it felt to me like almost the simplest and silliest thing, but she said, I would have never thought that I need to snap a picture of my fridge and my pantry before I go to the store, but it has saved me so much time.
Oh, that is such a great idea.
So she just, with her phone, snaps the picture and goes to the store. And if she ever has the question of, ooh, are we out of this or whatever, she can just look and she knows. So it's simple tips like that. Again, I wanted to make it easy for folks, but I do encourage people to kind of what we talked about with the recycling situation as much as possible to really be thoughtful about the products you're buying that are in packaging. And if possible to reduce that. So, you know, I talked about how to effectively shop a bulk aisle, how to effectively buy produce and things without packaging. And then also some ingredients to maybe avoid, like, you know, looking for things that are fair trade, especially when we're talking about chocolate or coffee, and also avoiding palm oil when we're talking about kind of more processed goods. So there's, I think, something in there for everybody, everybody who grocery shops ever.
You really were, I mean, you must have worked so hard on this because it is so detailed and it's enjoyable to read, which is great.
Oh my God, you're the nicest. You are so sweet. You're making me feel good over here.
Well, I admire it because I have a book coming out in January.
Oh my God, tell me.
Oh, well, it's called Clean Eating, Dirty Sex. And it's basically about how health, you know, healthy living affects your sex life. But it's so much beyond that. I mean, you could read this book if you're celibate and you'll still get all this great advice and in terms of how to live a healthier life and what to eat and how to shop and just ever how to communicate. There's interviews with sexologists, psychologists, nutritionists.
It's available for pre-order right
yes,
now.
Yes, it is.
I'm doing that right after I hop off.
Well, I would imagine your book is doing well. I mean, it is so good. And by the way, you have on the cover, the time for stepping up and protecting our planet is now. And this book is an easy, enjoyable place to start. Moby. Damn, girl, I'm impressed.
Thank you. Yeah. Moby's been an animal activist for a really long time, and I was lucky enough to become acquainted with him a few years ago, and he's, you know, been very supportive of the book, as have a lot of people. You know, I wanted to, when we had the galley, I'm sure you're probably in this process now, I did want to have some quotes on the book, but from people who are recognizable. But yeah, I wanted to also send the galley to kind of a diverse group of people. So
yeah,
got Susie Welch on there, who's basically financial expert among financial experts with Jack Welch. We've got Nicole Lappin, who also has like a bunch of great books. She writes Rich Bitch and Boss Bitch. And so it's nice to see that
yes,
the topic resonates with a variety of folks who are doing different kinds of things out in the world, because sustainability really is all of our responsibility. So
it's so true. Oh, Ashley, you have to come back. You should have a podcast. You're really fabulous. Tell us all the ways that we can find you.
You can find information about me as well as the book at ashleypiper.com, and that's ASHLEEPIPER. The book is sold on Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble. If you're in Canada, it's at all Indigo stores. It's on IndieBound, Books A Million, Powell's, The Strand, quite a few places. So Target and Walmart. And then let's see what else. Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Ashley Piper as well.
Ashley, you are so much fun. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
You can check out more about Naturally Savvy if you go to @NaturallySavvy, @AndreaDonsky, @HealthMediaGal1. I'm so glad you listened. Stay well.